Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
Michael Douglas's character, Gordon Gekko, in the 1987 movie Wall Street, famously declared, "Greed is good. Greed is right. Greed works." The question of whether Gekko was correct is being tested today in healthcare via private equity firms. Is private equity beneficial or harmful to physicians and patients? We will turn our focus to private equity in healthcare next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Max Reinbolt. Mr. Reinbolt is chairman of Coker Group. His lifetime of experience in healthcare, coupled with a strong skill set, makes him a go-to expert in the healthcare industry. He's also an author. I am very pleased to welcome Max Reinbolt to Sound Practice.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're very pleased to have you. Our conversation today is going to deal with private equity in healthcare, but I think our audience needs to know you've written a book in conjunction with the American Association for Physician Leadership, the parent of this podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about the book and the process of its creation?
Sure. Thanks for asking. We've written several books in partnership with AAPL and are honored to do so. This was a book that had kind of been thought up, so to speak. And by the way, I didn't write the entire book. I'm the principal author, but we have other Coker associates that contributed, and I want to make sure they get credit as well. But be that as it may, we have written several books, and this particular book was one that I felt was needed because really, frankly, hadn't seen a lot of, I've seen white papers and articles and so forth relative to private equity, but not kind of a complete encapsulation of everything that's involved with private equity and healthcare. So thankfully we partnered in that effort, and I'm real happy with the way it turned out. I will say this for benefit of a varied group of listeners, and I know y'all have listeners that are physicians, administrators, hospital leaders, et cetera, and private equity people. We really wrote the book in a kind of a neutral manner, in that private equity can be a little polarizing, as it were, for various individuals that are involved in the healthcare industry in America, but it really doesn't need to be. But yet we tried to write this with, always say, kind of portraying and illustrating the good, maybe a little bit of the bad, and even the ugly, if that's the way to put it. So the book was written for those purposes, and hopefully it'll be more informational and educational, and then those that want to use it as somewhat of a guidebook for deal making, which we do a lot of it within our firm as healthcare consultants, will find it valuable.
Excellent. And we will be placing a link to the book in the show notes. But for our audience's purposes right now, could you tell us the title of the book?
Sure. It's Private Equity in Healthcare. And then bylined under that, we just had Leadership, Economics, and Trends for the Future.
Excellent. Today, it's now no surprise that we're going to explore private equity in healthcare. And Max, before we get into the weeds on this, can you give me a sense of private equity's penetration into healthcare? I know we hear a lot about it, but just how common is it now?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to measure exactly when it began and for how long, but for the most part, and I've been a healthcare advisor consultant for over three decades here with Coker, I don't really recall. I mean, we've always had transactions with doctors and hospitals and so forth with investor groups. Private equity is, and I'm sure everyone knows this, so I'll be brief, is just what the name infers. It is a amalgamation of private, meaning it's not a public entity, investors. And they pool their money and invest, and more or less over the last 10 years or so, and that's very gray in terms of the timeline and how far back it goes, there has been a number of private equity-backed organizations, not just formed, they've been in existence for years and decades, but more so focused on investing in healthcare entities. Now, that could be anywhere from physician groups, practices, to surgery centers, small hospitals, independent emergency room entities, imaging centers, really anything that kind of forms that healthcare provider base. And typically, what we tried to cover in the book was everything from the strategy behind that on both sides, as well as the formation and structure of typical transactions. And we looked at the economics as well. So I'd say more intensive investment in private equity over the last 10 years or so.
So private equity in healthcare, is it a good fit?
I guess it depends on who you talk to, really and truly. And I'm not trying to be coy when I say that. I would say the jury's still out overall. Why is that the case? Well, there have been a bunch of transactions. Our firm represents, mostly on the sell side, groups and provider entities in healthcare selling to private equity, as it were. There's clearly it clearly works very well for some and maybe not so well for others. The reason I said the jury's still out is many of the transactions are still relatively new, meaning 5 years or less. And typically what happens in private equity is there's a point in time where the original investor group, private equity conglomerate as such, is ready to cash in. And there is a term for that. We call it recapitalization sometimes. More, I guess you'd say, more illustratively, we sometimes call it the second bite of the apple, because most of the investor sellers, vis-a-vis, let's say, a medical group, will sell 100% of their practice or whatever entity we're talking about, but then they'll buy back, if as such, 20 to 30%, and that's called the rollover equity. So that's where the second bite of the apple, as such, comes about. And that's when both parties cash in, because often at that point, the original private equity sponsor, as it's called, will actually get their return. Now, there's a lot that happens during that 3 to 5, maybe even 7 years that the original private equity investor owns that entity. And we'll talk more about that as we get into some other things, I'm sure, today. But I'll just leave it at that. Is it a good deal? Quickly, I'll just say it's favored by older physicians when we're talking about physician-owned entities, and we usually are. Why would the younger physicians not be as enamored? Well, because the economics of the deal allow the older physician who's closer to retirement to realize their equity value much more so than they would if they just wait till they retire and they sell back their equity, as it were, to their partners. And so it gives them a better payday. Now, there's a price for that, which is why the younger physicians aren't as enamored with it. And that is, private equity essentially takes part of the earnings of the practice that is typically distributed in the form of compensation, and they add it back to the practice value and then apply a multiple to that earnings that is not distributed. And that's how they get the upfront money, which is enticing to older physicians. The younger physicians are more concerned about putting their kids through college and all that. And so they're not as interested in getting that upfront money as such as the older physician would be. So there can be a fairly significant fracturing of the group if we're not careful. We have to be very careful to not let that happen. I'll stop there because, again, as we get into more and more of the mechanics of the way the deal's structured, I'll comment some more on that.
It occurs to me that when I asked the question about whether it was a good fit, I didn't mention metrics. And it seems like the metrics that we all are using are dollars. Is that the appropriate metric? Is that the only metric for these deals?
No, it's not the only metric. It's a big one because typically and very simplistically, it's not a real complicated scenario. Let's just say by way of example, and I'll use a very simple example. Let's say a medical practice, let's just say it's a ENT group. They have $1 million a year of what we might call excess earnings, meaning that they're paying their partners a market compensation per doctor. And when it's all said and done, there's $1 million left over. And so an income, someone like us that would do what's called a quality of earnings review. And let's say we take that $1 million, and not only that is taken away from their compensation in the model, but we actually tack on another $1 million that they also have gotten compensated for. So now there's $2 million of earnings that's left in the business. That is a significant metric. The other major metric, and it's just multiplication now, is the multiple. So the private equity firm will negotiate, and it's relative to market, it's relative to interest rates and return on investment and all those things. But typically, and I don't want to lock in on a particular multiple, let's say for a ENT practice that has some procedural components to it that come with it, there would be a 7 or an 8 multiple. Well, if you take the 8, multiply it by the 2 million, that's 16 million. That's what would be paid. Let's say there's 4 doctors in the group and they each get $4 million. And there you go. Now that for the most part, usually can be qualifying for capital gains rates, which are much lower tax rates than ordinary income. But wait a minute, that 1 or even 2 million dollars that we've now capitalized and worked off the multiple to get to the upfront payment, that's no longer compensation. So the physicians, all 4 of them post-transaction, take what we call couple of terms, a haircut, or it's also called an income scrape. And by the way, we have a glossary in the book that describes all these crazy terms. But the scrape of $2 million means they get that much less in compensation going forward. But wait a minute, they've got their $4 million each up front at a lower tax rate. So you see what I mean when I say it's good and it's bad. In some ways, it kind of depends on who you are, where you sit, and what you want out of the deal, you know, as such. By the way, that $4 million might actually only be $3.5 million because maybe we've done $500,000 of rollover. So that 500 times 4, and I know I'm throwing out a bunch of numbers here, $2 million of rollover is not paid up front, it's reinvested. And the hope is in 3, 5, or 7 years when the recap takes place and they've grown this base or platform of purchases, it'll be worth twice that or three times that. So the second bite of the apple could actually be as good or better than the first one. And that's part of the quote unquote pitch behind private equity.
And when you talk about growth, I assume that that's a mixture of actual more dollars coming in as well as some efficiencies or better management. Is that fair?
It is fair. And it's sometimes folks like me that are compelled to not necessarily take sides on, you know, which one's better, the sell or the buy or opportunities. I prefer to just tell it like it is. So the talk about economies of scale and efficiencies, very true, but overrated in most cases. It doesn't happen as quickly as sometimes it's touted, and it may not be as good. Now, with that said, here's another term that we use in these transactions. There's what's called income repair. What is that? Well, remember I said there's an income scrape. So many private equity firms will, and I'm not saying it's not true, it is true, will say, well, we're going to work together, and we're not only going to make it more efficient, we're going to potentially add more practices or more things, services to this base, and we'll grow the overall corpus of what we have here. And you'll get a part of that because of more efficiencies in overhead and, frankly, just more revenue. And they'll also say, we may negotiate better commercial rates with the payers because we're bigger. We've got more to come to the table with off this platform as such. And so those are some of the positives that can result, but there's no guarantees, no guarantees. You don't know. But income repair is an effort to do just that, repair that lost income from the scrape that I explained earlier.
Does this impact the ability to bring new physicians into a practice?
You're very perceptive. Absolutely. Now, I'll give you the pro and the con of that. The pro, and it's totally legit, totally true, is that, again, we're talking about a larger critical mass that's being formed of providers. Go back to my ENT example. We have four. There's capacity for two or three more in the next couple of years or 5 years. So the private equity firm will supply the capital, recruitment costs, recruitment efforts, et cetera, and maybe even some subsidy, as it were, in compensation to recruit more ENT surgeons. That's accretive to the overall platform that we're talking about. And it's very much real, and it's part of the goals and objectives of the private equity firm when they buy. They don't want this thing that they're buying to just sit still and stagnant. It's got to grow. It's got to grow. The less positive part of that is there's always a cost to that. And it could, depending on how the deal's structured, come somewhat out of the compensation. It could reduce that cost of recruitment, and the cost of that initial salary goes against whatever earnings might be out there, and it increase in value if it doesn't, you know, realize the increased revenue and bottom line. And so in effect, indirectly, the doctors might pay for some of that, if you follow what I'm saying. So no guarantees. You're in it together. You're putting down some risk as such, as is the private equity firm. And so hopefully it works out.
Do you find when physicians are being recruited that there is a hesitancy to join a firm or a practice that's private equity owned in part or in whole because they can never become an equity member of that organization.
Yes, we do run into that. Usually we're talking about a younger physician, someone who's not been in practice, let's say even as much as 10 years or even a lot less than that. Their perspective is a little different than perhaps a physician who's been in practice even 15 or 20 years and certainly much longer. In that, equity and ownership is not unimportant. That's two negatives, I should say. It's important to them, but their whole goal and objective of their careers somewhat different. And employment absent equity is not necessarily, you know, up there number one on their list of goals for their career. And so we can get through such transactions. Now, in some cases, additional equity could be awarded to a newly recruited physician, again, in that rollover entity. Because remember, they're going to retain equity, meaning the doctors, in my example, in the rollover. And while it could be a result of some dilution of them when they bring in a new doctor, they could certainly have some ownership. The other thing about equity is always when we do a fair number of what we call buy-sell agreements among existing groups, where you bring in a new partner and, okay, what's it going to cost to buy into the partnership? And what I always say is if it's a private setting, it's kind of whatever you want to make it, if you know what I mean, in terms of what the buy-in would be. But you want to make it affordable, and you also want to create an atmosphere where the newly recruited physician, even after a couple of years, if it takes that long, feels like a partner. And you mitigate that through governance and leadership structure, where you give that new, quote, partner a say in the way the practice is run and governed. And sometimes that's enough to offset the lack of equity that you're asking about. So just a few tricks of the trade, so to speak.
We've got to talk about some of these studies out there that show increased morbidity, mortality associated with private equity. This might fall under your category of the ugly part of the conversation, but what say you?
Well, I think I haven't personally experienced what you're referring to, but I haven't been exposed to every single, you know, all the hundreds and not thousands of private equity sponsors and deals as such. The only comparison that we can make to what you're asking about, and it truly resulted in morbidity, was what we called in the 90s the PPMC, Physician Practice Management Companies. And I won't name names, although, well, I could. There were several prominent names. But the model that was there, and it didn't work, had some similarities to private equity. But a major difference was the real end goal in those deals was public offerings. And that's not what this is. And while you might say, well, it could be comparable. Yeah, it could be private equity. But when you set up a company that is the end goal is to go public, you're really looking at and very much dependent upon the quirkiness of the public market and the rules that go with it. So practice management companies like Med Partners, I'll go ahead and name one, in the 90s really didn't work for the most part. And so I don't know that, I personally don't think we're talking about the same structure and situation in this case. I think there's some safety nets with private equity, But to be fair, and we try to point this out in the book, we don't know the future, and you know, interest rates. I will say one thing, even since we wrote the book, which was very recent that we finished it, I would say that the multiples, generally speaking, are not quite as high as they were. And why is that? Well, one reason is cost of money is higher. Now, who knows what's going to happen? We have a new administration. Who knows exactly what will happen with interest rates? If they don't go down, I don't think the multiples will go up. That made sense. If they do go down, I don't think there's any guarantees. And furthermore, there's always a period, a lag there. Sure. The last thing I'll say about all this, though, is there is still a lot of money, a lot of capital out there that wants to be invested and wants to be invested in healthcare. Because healthcare in this country is becoming more and more a greater percentage of our gross national product. And with the longer lives that people are living and the quality of life, and even to some extent, that quality of life being better, meaning I think people are able to retire a little earlier than maybe I would have, although I haven't retired, but I sure could have. All that comes into play here, and we just don't know exactly. But it's a fun thing, and it's certainly an option for physicians in particular these days.
We've been talking about private equity in healthcare. It seems to me that there might be differences depending upon the area of healthcare. Perhaps private equity is a better fit for some areas of healthcare than others. Long-term care may be different than the ENT group example that you gave. Yeah. Am I right about that, or should we just look at it across the board as private equity and healthcare?
Oh, no, you're spot on, correct. For example, there's a couple of specialties that have really clicked with private equity and vice versa. One's dermatology. Now, why is that? Another would be ophthalmology, even radiology, the G's as we call them sometimes. I want to be careful how I say this. Hospitals are not, they are still interested and certainly care about dermatology, radiology for sure, ophthalmology. But other than radiology, the other two that I named are not significantly involved with hospitals and health systems and vice versa. We helped represent a large derm practice selling to private equity, and I don't believe the physicians, I'm not even sure they were credentialed at a hospital. And that it wasn't because they couldn't have been or didn't like hospitals. They just didn't need to be, because they can do all their work in their own procedure rooms or their clinic. And so there are specialties that kind of fit better. Now, with that said, some of the other specialties that have a definite interest and vice versa in health systems and hospitals are doing private equity deals. Let me give you a couple examples. Orthopedics, musculoskeletal, very interested. Now, another would be cardiology. They need to work and have available to work in a hospital, because there are some surgeries and other procedures that those specialists are doing that it's best for the patient. Frankly, in many cases, the payer requires it based on age and condition of the patient, et cetera, to do the work inside a hospital. And so they will do it there as opposed to a surgery center or their own private cath lab or whatever. Is that going to enamor the cardiology practice to a health system and vice versa? And the answer is no. Why would that be? Well, because they're pulling a lot of work out of that, what would otherwise be done in the hospital. So there is a tug and pull based on the specialty. You rarely hear of an issue where a dermatology practice who's done a deal with private equity has any kind of crossways with a hospital for that reason. But there are those that definitely do. Now, I'll just quickly say there are ways to navigate through this. We've done three-way deals where GI is a good example where that works pretty well, because you'll have GI practices, gastroenterology, that'll have invested in an endoscopy center, maybe with a health system, a joint venture. They want to do a private equity deal, meaning the group. And so the group may come in and albeit a minority interest, have a partial ownership in that endoscopy center with the health system. Maybe the health system dilutes some of its equity, maybe not. Maybe it all comes from the group in a three-way deal. But it is possible to be done, and we've done some of those, but not necessarily the most popular thing with hospitals.
Will regulatory concerns, which really to date haven't been as prominent as they could be, start to pop up, do you believe?
Yeah. Well, let me be careful here. We always have whoever you want to call Uncle Sam or the government, federal and states, by the way, looking over our shoulder in healthcare, and for good reason. I mean, I don't have to go into all the reasons. Private equity has been not immune from the rules by any means, but let's just say they haven't been as subject to the regulations and the requirements that are very much akin to the Stark regulations and anti-kickback. I'm not saying that they haven't been somewhat, but not as much as hospitals for sure. We really have to toe the mark with deals with hospitals, fair market value, commercially reasonable, buying referrals or hopefully not, et cetera. However, more and more private equity deals are completed, we're seeing more and more interest in Congress, all the way down to different regulators in government, both state and federal, in private equity deal structures. So kind of a long answer, but yeah, I think we're going to see more and more regulations, particularly as more and more deals take place. And you see the multiples still being pretty high and the kind of dollars that are being paid doctors who own groups, et cetera. Yeah.
And a little bit of business and economic training would seem to indicate that potential risk for private equity might make them demand a higher reward.
Great.
Is that fair going forward?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just a logical progression as such. And remember, as far as I know, I'm sure there might be some exceptions. I don't know what they would be. We're talking about for-profit entities now that are investors. Private equity is not for profit. Now, that is no criticism intended of them, because I want to quickly say the private equity firms that we've worked with or even across from are very concerned about quality and good care and all those things that the not-for-profits and the for-profit hospitals et al. And practices are as well. And so with that said, there's no denying that private equity is looking for a return on their investment, and a pretty good one. Health systems that are not-for-profit, we always use the term, you've heard it, for them, no money, no mission for a not-for-profit. Well, that's true. You've got to be able to make ends meet and hopefully even have a little excess left over if you're a not-for-profit. just because you don't pay income taxes per se, doesn't mean you can't have a margin or shouldn't. But private equity makes no bones about it. They are looking for a good return.
As our time together comes to an end, I'm going to ask you to make a prediction. Where do you see private equity in the healthcare industry 3 years from now?
My old crystal ball. Well, first of all, I'm typically off a little, but with that caveat, I would say that over the next 3 years and in 3 years, we will still have a lot of private equity transactions being done. What we will see in 3 years that we haven't seen as much of yet is the recaps and the second bite. That will really tell the tale. Because if we're talking about going back to my example in the ENT group, and we're talking about a physician who made $3 or $4 million up front, less taxes, but reinvested, let's say 500 of that $3.5 or $4 million, if that 500 turns into another $3 million, then you're going to hear a lot of positive, because that's a really good investment return. So I think, and by then we'll start to see these recapitalization deals happening. Whereas even though there's been private equity deals being done for at least a decade, like I said earlier, the real core and bulk of them are not that old per se. So I think we'll see that. The other thing, I don't think multiples will go dramatically high or lower than where they are now. I think they'll be fairly stable. And it will depend. You ask about different specialties, and I should have mentioned this even then. The multiples can be different based on what you bring to the table. If an orthopedic group has a surgery center that comes along, trails along in the deal with the practice, then there's a good chance that the private equity firm will pay a higher multiple, because multiples on profitable surgery centers will go higher than multiples of just the practice with, you know, imaging or ancillaries like that. So I think we'll see multiples fairly comparable, not that much more, not that much less in 3 years. The other thing, the last thing I'll say is I think there'll be, there's still a lot of capital to be invested, and I see no reason why there won't be in the next 3 years and in 3 years. I think there'll still be a lot of money out there. You know, we'll see how that all fits into the equation relative to private groups, private equity, hospitals and health systems, both for-profit and not-for-profit, et cetera, et cetera. It's an exciting time in healthcare. I truly mean that. And private equity is a part of that.
The book is Private Equity in Healthcare. The author and my guest is Max Reinbolt, chairman of Coker Group. Max, thank you so much for your time and for being on Sound Practice.
Mike, it was a pleasure, real honor to be with you, and look forward to opportunities in the future if you're interested. And again, we're honored to join you today. Thanks so much.
My thanks to Max Reinbolt for his time and insights. His book, Private Equity in Healthcare, is a solid and balanced look at an important, timely issue for medicine. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org.
That is holy cow. Batman and Robin. Ritual Kapow.